Station on the ground reporting. News as it happens. Yeah! Here I am, your main man, reporting from Jam Jam. On 16,000 kilocycles FM and 1,000 megahertz on the ground. Yeah!
Hi, I'm Ronald Weaver from Santa Monica. You're listening to WGXC
Acra.
I got a stack of records here, a stack of records there. I got records scattered all over everywhere, but I'm looking for one that I can't find. The one where the guitar plays so fine, 'cause that's the only song that my baby likes to hear.
Turn out to the WGXC Record Fair, Sunday, September 15th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Basilica Hudson, 110 South Front Street in Hudson, near the Amtrak station. There are still a few spots left for vendors. If you'd like to get a table, email info at wgxc.org. WGXC Record Fair coincides with the Basilica Soundscape, September 13th through 15th, an immersive, innovative weekend of art, music, and culture. Turn out for the WGXC Record Fair, Sunday, September 15th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Basilica Hudson.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Lynn Sloniker of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
Radio broadcast, this I believe.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here. Sarah Trafton reports for Columbia Greene Media that when Greene County legislators were deciding whether or not to spend $70 million on a new jail in Coxsackie, they were told the old jail in Catskill was unusable. Now that construction has begun on the most expensive building project in Greene County history, the county is spending money asking engineers if the old jail building at 80 Bridge Street is actually usable. Legislators have been touting the old jail as a potential parking lot with 23 spaces or 41 spaces next to the county courthouse. But residents at a July 23rd meeting told legislators they have all sorts of ideas for that space near the main intersection in the village of Catskill. Ideas such as a hotel or restaurant, a museum or community space, a place for vocational training or other learning, were all raised by speakers at the meeting. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Amanda Purcell is reporting for Columbia Greene Media. The Schenectady Police Department this week launched the Schenectady Cares Program, an alternative approach to helping people battling drug addiction, modeled after the program initiated in Chatham by Police Chief Peter Volkman. The program uses trained officers to help addicts find beds at treatment centers. No one seeking help is turned away or jailed, and walk-ins are welcome. The Schenectady program was modeled after the Police Assisted Addiction and Recovery Initiative model and the three-year-old Chatham Cares for You program. In Chatham, recovering addicts are able to walk into the police station on Main Street for screening.
Any drug or drug paraphernalia is marked for destruction. No questions asked. Recovering addicts are not charged with possession. Working in collaboration with New York Choices Recover Center or Catholic Charities, the person is assessed and moved on to the first steps of treatment. Chatham Cares for You has helped 225 people all find treatment since it began in 2016. The Schenectady Police Department said in a statement, and I quote, "We know this program may not save the world, but it may save someone. It may save someone you know or someone we know, and to that person, we may have saved their world. It makes it worth it," end quote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
The Daily Freeman reports that a spokesperson for Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan announced July 25th that the Ulster County Fair has canceled its show with the country band Confederate Railroad. The band uses the Confederate flag in its logo, and its show at the Illinois State Fair was canceled earlier this year over the same issue. Confederate Railroad leader Danny Shirley said, quote, "I've done nothing wrong. I love the part of the country I'm from, and I will never apologize for that. It seems that everybody kind of gets looking for something to get upset about," unquote, Shirley said, quote, "and I guess I'm just the flavor of the month," unquote. Ryan explained specifically what he thought the problem was, quote, "The Ulster County Fair must be an event that everyone can enjoy while it representing the values of all members of our community," unquote. Ryan said in a prepared statement, quote, "Any showcasing of a symbol of division and racism runs counter to that principle and will be vigorously opposed by my administration," unquote. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Sarah Tapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. The Catskill Planning Board July 23rd gave the go-ahead to a new solar energy project. The 1.6 megawatt proposal for Corderskill Road was presented to the town board in January by representatives of Renewa Energy, Omni Navitas, and Crawford & Associates Engineering. More than 5,000 solar panels will be installed on 5.8 acres of the 112-acre property, which the company will lease for 25 years from owners Alfred and Nancy Beers. Included in the resolution for the project's special use permit is a condition that the fence around the project be 8 feet tall unless an equivalent agreement is made with the code enforcement officer. Other conditions included a storm water management plan, erosion management plan, vegetation management plan, installation limited to the dry weather, avoidance of using herbicides to maintain the property, providing fire safety training, abiding by the operations and maintenance schedule, and limiting panels to 6.5 feet in height. Planning Board Chairman Joseph Izzo said concerns expressed by Scenic Hudson and Olana State Historic Site concerning visual impact have been resolved. Izzo, Planning Board Vice Chairman Larry Fetterman, Board Members Teresa Golden, Charles Holtz, and Reed Moore voted in favor of the project. Board Member Bridget Hernandez voted no, and Thomas Decker was absent. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Brian Fowler reports for Politico that President Donald Trump lost an attempt to put a judge he appointed on one of the two cases now about giving Congress access to his New York tax returns. Judge Trevor McFadden, who was appointed by Trump, rejected a bid by Trump lawyer William Consovoy to have McFadden hear both cases about the president's returns. In one case, the president's lawyers are seeking a restraining order against Democrats trying to make Trump's New York taxes public. Another lawsuit by Ways and Means Chairman Richard Neal seeks the president's federal tax returns. House Democrats are trying to get that thrown out. Quote, "The Ways and Means Committee's decision whether to avail itself of a newly enacted provision of the New York tax code is a legislative act absolutely immune from challenge through the court system," unquote, lawyers for the House of Representatives said in a court filing. Quote, "This court thus lacks jurisdiction to grant the relief requested by Mr. Trump," unquote. Read more about this story in Politico.
MidHudsonNews.com is reporting Rockland County officials July 25th declared the county's measles crisis over. Since the measles crisis began in October, there have been 283 confirmed cases in the county, causing a state of emergency to be imposed. County Executive Edwin Day reported that during the last 3 months, the number of new confirmed cases has declined by 29% in May, by 63% in June, and by 42% in July. He said, and I quote, "After a 13% increase in confirmed cases between March and April, we have seen a steady decline since then. In short, to Rockland County, congratulations. We assured all back then when things looked very bleak, when we were the hardest hit area in the United States with 30% of the cases, that we would beat this outbreak, and we have," end quote. Since the outbreak began, the county has administered close to 26,000 MMR vaccinations. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com.
The Daily Freeman reports that Representative Antonio Delgado holds a series of town hall meetings starting Saturday, July 27th. Delgado holds town meetings in Otsego, Columbia, Montgomery, Sullivan, and Delaware counties. In Columbia County, Delgado will take questions at 6:30 p.m. July 29th at Chatham Brewing, 59 Main Street in Chatham. He will also be at the Roots Brewing Company in Oneonta at 5 p.m. July 27th. In Canajoharie at 6:30 p.m. July 30th, in Bethel at 6:30 p.m. July 31st, and in Sydney at 6:30 p.m. on August 1st. Usually Delgado gives an opening statement and takes questions for about an hour. His staff attempts to create a Facebook live feed online, and WGXC airs the webcast on the air at 90.7 FM if possible.
Margaret Tomlinson, Catskill Town Chair of the Greene County Democratic Committee, reported out this week on the results of the party's recently held Catskill caucus. The assembled voters endorsed four candidates in the upcoming general election. 46 Democrats voted July 18th with the following results. Incumbent Town Supervisor Doreen Davis was selected in her bid for re-election. In the town board race, Mark Villa and Francis Spark were chosen. Scott Myers was runner-up. Michael De La Benedictus got the nod as the caucus choice for receiver of taxes. The Democrats failed to nominate candidates for town clerk and highway superintendent. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts that Friday should be sunny with a high of 80 and a low around 62. Saturday should also be sunny with a high of 80. Low around 64. There's a chance of showers in the afternoon Saturday, a 20% chance. Sunday should be mostly sunny again with a high of 83. Again, a 20% chance of rain or a thunderstorm throughout the day. Sunday night, a low around 65. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM Acre, Catskill Hudson Radio for open ears. There are so many events on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, and you can add your own by pressing the Add an Event button right there on the page. If you do, folks like me will read your community event on the radio. Folks around the world will see it online at WGXC.org, including some of these events.
On Friday, July 26th, choreographer-dancer Jamal Jackson, with members of his company, leads a drum workshop with West African dance and drumming from Mali at PS 21, Performance Spaces for the 21st Century in Chatham, starting at 1 p.m. Martin Courtney of Real Estate and Riley Walker perform at BSP Kingston on Wall Street, starting at 8 p.m. The Fops perform New York 1960s garage and psychedelic music at Club Helsinki Hudson, starting at 9 p.m. On Saturday, July 27th, inspired by Lewis Hyde's beloved classic The Gift, Creativity and the Artist in the Modern World, Gift is a film that explores the parallels between artists' work and a gift economy. Filmmaker Robin McKenna will be in conversation with Hawthorne Valley's executive director following the screening at Hawthorne Valley Farm on County Route 21C in Ghent from 7 to 9 p.m. Rory Block and Shamika Copeland perform at PS 21 on Route 66 in Chatham starting at 7:30 p.m. And finally, on Sunday, July 28th, Yoga of the Earth is a monthly gentle morning yoga practice with teacher Stephanie Fisher and is backdropped by Olana's expansive Hudson River views from 9 to 10 a.m. at the Olana State Historic Site in Hudson. Basilica has partnered again with New York International Children's Film Festival to show their Best of the Fest Kid Flick series of shorts. The free screening series will also include free popcorn and is recommended for kids ages 8 and up from 3 to 5 p.m. at Basilica Hudson on South Front Street. That's it for this week's WGXC Community Calendar. You can add your own event and hear it right here on the radio by visiting WGXC.org and clicking on the calendar link at the top of the page.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Alex Benson of Tivoli, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
Radio for open ears.
East Chatham, West Chatham, North Chatham, and Old Chatham.
the power of hope. And sometimes we visit your country and leave your home. Sometimes ride on horse, but sometimes walk alone. Sometimes the songs that we hear are just songs of power.
That was Eyes of the World from Tal Nacional, who are performing at the Half Moon in Hudson on August 6th.
Oh, the person who called now seems to have shown up. Come on. Was it you on the phone?
Yeah, it was me on the phone.
You, Ellen, you know who this is, right?
Hi, Rebecca. Nice to meet
you. She can't get enough of WGXC.
I can't.
She can't leave what's-his-face alone.
Kieran?
Yeah, Kieran.
What are you talking about? I can't leave him alone. Rebecca Borer.
I'm
in the house, baby.
Oh,
here I am. So we got a 1 hour of radio that just happened to you all listening out here on the Thursday afternoon show.
Yeah.
How you feeling today, Ellen?
Okay.
It's a little bit cooler in here than it was last Monday when I was here.
Oh, yeah, it was horrible. Or not as cool as our Saturday that we spent in each other's company for about an hour.
Yeah, that was disgustingly hot.
It was
the sort of thing where you're up on a hill, there's all of these people. I was probably the youngest person there.
You brought the age limit, the age average down by about 50 years.
It was probably like realistically 30. And everyone that I talked to, the sweat was just dripping down their face. It was
including
really
me.
Gnarly.
This
was Tom took me to some fancy party,
the Olana Fest,
the Gala.
I wanted to bring you, Ellen, but I knew that, you know, you were busy.
Yeah.
I was busy.
I was the second, how do you say that?
Actually, you were like the fourth.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I meant after Ellen.
Oh, after Ellen, yeah.
Yeah. I know you have your list of socializing people.
She's a lot more fun than I am.
That's not true, Ellen.
Debatable.
I think me and you would have more fun than.
Oh, thanks.
We just get rid of Tom and be all good. So I'm here for a very specific reason.
You have a performance coming up.
Tomorrow.
Oh, I got my little book here.
So we got The Night Pest and Jackie Showstopper at the Spotty Dog.
I got to ask you about this.
Yeah.
I saw on the gram.
On the gram.
Get that?
If you don't, if you aren't above 50, then you might know the gram as Instagram.
Oh, aren't you funny? It's tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night. So
Spotty Dog, what time?
Spotty Dog. So we're playing. Jackie Showstopper starts her tour tomorrow. Incredible. 6:30 p.m.
6:30.
The Night Pets are going to be backing Jackie. Then we're going to take some sort of an intermission. We're going to get some food. We're going to hang out. And the Night Pets are then going to play again at like 8:30, 9 p.m. because we only play at night.
Okay. So Jackie, yeah. Intermission, sort of having fun.
6:30.
Is there going to be DJs in between?
No. It's going to be like intermission, like go get your dinner.
Okay. And then you're going to go on at, the Night Pets are going to go on at 8?
8:30, probably. 8:30.
Well, as you know, I am a avid fan of the Night Pets.
Yeah, you've been to a lot of our shows.
Way too many. I mean, sorry, a lot of.
Who are the Night Pets?
It's the band that I'm in. It is I, Rebecca Borer, and Peter McPartland and Amanda Whitbeck, and we form a unit. A triad, if you will. And
a trio, in traditional terms.
And I play the bass, Amanda plays the drums, and Peter plays the guitar. And we write songs, we play them, we mess around. It's a very engaging live performance, if I do say so myself.
You're allowed to say that about yourself.
I feel like you've seen it before, and I've seen you smiling.
I think I just had gas.
I think Dot had a good time.
She did.
Yeah.
She was like moving and stuff.
Yeah, I saw a little dancing.
Yeah, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
Jackie Showstopper. What's the deal with her?
So Jackie Showstopper is an incredible musician. She plays with Pinky and Ampy. She frequents Solaris, is just like writing all these songs. She really loves the Property Brothers, so we're actually going to be covering one of the Property Brothers, the twins. You know, they're twins that flip houses. They find houses, they flip them. They're from around here. She loves them, so we're covering their
Where's
country
Jackie
song.
From?
I don't actually know where Jackie's from. You're going to have to find out tomorrow.
She's local.
6:30 p.m.
She's not local. She's
yeah,
local?
Yeah, she's. I think she's pretty local, yeah. Yeah, she's local.
I don't
she's
know how to ask
she's
this
within
question.
WGXC's distance.
I see.
Yeah.
Is this kind of a Daniel Johnson experience?
What is this?
I don't know him. Do you know his work?
The
performer? Daniel Johnson?
Isn't that guy with the alien? I played it last time because someone requested it.
Oh, you don't know his work.
I feel like Amanda would have a better idea.
Okay. Well, she might not be listening.
So, Tom, what's going on with you today? Because you're coming for people left and right. Well, you had some people in here.
What did I do wrong?
You joking around? Or
that's what I do.
Yeah, you're right. I'm trying to come in hot.
So, Rebecca, how you know?
You only got a minute, Ellen, before the news starts. But
yeah,
go ahead.
Okay. Can you hear? Okay. Through that hair, between the head and the earphone.
I actually can't hear anything most of the time. Yeah.
What?
Where am I? How did I get here? Yeah, you
once
gotta
again,
start picking up the phone so I don't have to drive over here.
Well, that was good that we didn't, so it made you come over.
It's true.
Once again, you're listening to WGXC, and in a minute, we're going to hear the news.
This is WGXC Hands On Radio, 90.7 FM, Acre, Hudson, Catskill, North Chatham, Chatham, East Chatham, West Chatham, South Chatham.
Old Chatham.
Anchorage.
Hey, Ellen, remember when we had this kind of enthusiasm for life?
I think Ellen still does.
Ellen says, I don't. I'm giving up.
You that. Are what we call a curmudgeon.
I'm trying not to be. That's the thing. I'm really trying hard not to be curmudgeonly.
He has a dog to deal with.
Oh,
that's
God.
True. Now you have a great-grandchild.
Yeah, you haven't met Sparky, have you?
No.
I didn't think so.
I haven't had the pleasure. That dog is going to get big. I know everyone says that to you,
yeah.
But I'm just saying it again.
Just in case I forgot.
We got 20 seconds left.
I know. Oh, she's an old pro at this place.
I know what's up. Actually, I'm just a guest, though.
Yeah,
I'm
I know.
No
I get
co-host.
It. I get it.
I would like to have my own show once every 6 months. It will be 3 hours long.
Well,
I would get guests.
You got two
Call
more
in. Call in if you want me to have my own show.
Turn it up. Turn it up. A little bit higher. Radio. Turn it up. That's enough. So you know. It's got so. Radio. Radio. Turn it up.
It's February.
That was Catskill's Amy Rigby with The President Can't Read, a 2019 release.
Tell us a little bit about yourself as a singer-songwriter. Who is Amy Rigby?
Who am I? Gosh, I wish I knew. I've been, like, it's been decades of trying to figure that out. I write songs and have done since I lived in New York City back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and started playing music down there. And started out just as a fan going to punk shows at CBGB's and Max's and during the late 70s, and eventually started writing songs myself. And rather than playing punk music, we started a country band in the early 80s in the East Village of New York City. And It was a good kind of music to play in an apartment building that didn't disturb. It didn't have drums, and we didn't disturb the neighbors. So, and also I really got into country music in the early 80s, old records from the 30s, 40s, and 50s that I had never heard before, and started discovering just this great kind of songwriting. I guess 60s and 70s too, Loretta Lynn. And I loved the detail of country songs, the kind of real life stories that the songwriters told. And, even though their experience was rural, they were, writing about country life. And I related to stories about working people and people trying to raise a family, make a living, and that inspired me to start writing my own songs.
Did you actually record a country music, or have your recordings all been in the sort of indie rock kind of vein?
No, my first album, I had a band called Last Roundup, and we were on Rounder, and it was very much a country album, and went to Nashville to do recording. This was back in the late 80s. And was really kind of committed to playing that kind of music. After that, I had a all-female, a trio called The Shams, a little bit like The Roaches. I don't know if you know them at all, but, vocal harmonies and just really kind of straightforward songwriting. And semi-acoustic music, kind of a little rock, a little country, a little folk. And we put out some records on Matador. And then I started making my own records in the mid-90s. And, maybe kind of finally allowed, started having drums on my records, started playing electric guitar, and so kind of went more in a rock direction.
And
that's what I've continued to do.
That's when Diary of a Modern Housewife came out in the 90s?
Yeah, that was my first solo record, but I'd already been playing in bands and making records for 10 years before that. So it was like a lot harder to get a record out back then. I don't know how old you are, if you remember, but it just was really kind of, it took a couple years to get, to find somebody that knew someone that had a studio, and someone had to know how to work the equipment, and you had to have the money to press up the records. And I mean, in a way all of that is still true, but it was just a lot more mysterious back then.
Yeah, I guess these days, back then I remember bands that were trying to make it and that didn't have money, they'd have cassettes and things like that had a lower barrier to entry, although they still had to record them. Nowadays, I don't know, I marvel at touring musicians today because I don't know how they do it. With the collapse of the record industry, and it just seems like the only artists who are making any money are the huge ones, and everyone else is scrambling for what's left. Is the business model now back to where it was hundreds of years ago when it was, whatever you could make touring? Or how do people do it these days? How do you do it?
Well, I guess that is a great thing about touring, is that is kind of the only way you can make money. and it's not for everybody. And but getting in front of people and playing music for them, it's like one of the few things, along with like getting a haircut and having a beer in a bar, is one of the few things you like. You can't do that over the internet. People still like to come together, I think, and hear people actually playing and singing in the room with them. And so I think, you know, nowadays it is, there's a lot more people vying for those, you know, people's attention and vying for gigs. But before, I think, you know, maybe you saw it as a way to try to sell records for your record label. And now you're just like, put the records out yourself and try to sell them at shows. And it actually, you know, it can, it's never been easy, but it can, you know, it can work on a small scale.
And who is this guy, Reckless Eric, who shows up in your bio sometimes in online publicity?
Oh, Reckless Eric. Well, well, he, I was a fan of his music. He was on the Stiff label in out of England in the 70s, along with like Nick Lowe, Elvis Costello, The Damned. He just made some great records back then that I really loved. And when they got reissued in the late 90s, I started covering one of his songs, and through that I ended up meeting him, and we eventually ended up getting married and making 3 records together, touring together for almost 10 years. And so yeah, he's he's my husband, and he's also kind of an idol of mine.
Sounds like a great country song if you get a chance to writing it.
I love that. I know it's I hadn't thought of, I have written a song about us called Do You Remember That? And we made a really fun video for that. And it's a really sweet song, but I hadn't thought of, you know, writing it from that other perspective. It's kind of, I like that. I might steal that.
So what can folks in Troy expect on Tuesday?
Well, it's going to be, you know, kind of a rock set. Bass, drums, electric guitar, some acoustic guitar. Reckless Eric will be playing bass, and a guy named Doug Weigel, who runs a record store in Kingston, he's going to play drums. And it'll be original songs, real life songs, but you know, I like when songs, you know, maybe the subject matter might be kind of mundane, but I always like look for some sort of transcendence in the music. That's what attracted me to rock music in the first place, was something that kind of like lifts you up, even while it's talking about, you know, how hard it can be. So, you know, all of those things.
Is there anything you'd like to add? I always forget to ask something, so I leave it to you to have the last word.
Sure. I mean, I've enjoyed coming up to Troy a couple times and playing at the River Street Beat Shop. I mean, it's funny because Troy, when I grew up in Pittsburgh, and my father worked in the steel industry, and he would travel to these towns that had like steel plants. And I feel like Troy was one of the places it just used to come up, you know, like, where's Dad? Anyway, I've enjoyed visiting Troy a few times since we moved up to this area. I think it's such a beautiful town, like the architecture, and I think it's a really interesting place. So I'm happy to be able to like participate in the town and do something for people who live there and anybody who wants to travel from somewhere else in the area.
Empty tonight, nothing feels right, nothing feels right. I'm going out on my own, can't stay home, no I can't stay home. When I'm holding the microphone,
It's like I'm holding on to something that's gone. When I sing, I won't back down. I don't feel down. Yeah, I'm alright. And when I do, don't do me like that. Hey, I'm back, walking into the light. And when I'm bringing, she went down swinging. I ain't just singing. I'm coming on, American girl. Take me out of this world.
That was Catskills' Amy Rigby with her 2018 song, Tom Petty Karaoke.
Here's what's coming up on WGXE 90.7 FM on Friday, July 26, 2019. Tune in to the WGXE Afternoon Show from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. This show features local news, interviews with community leaders and personalities, and a rundown of local and regional events, weather updates, and more. And you can call in to go on the air with our host at 518-828-2090. In the second hour of the show, Nancy Barton, the director of the Prattsville Arts Center and Residency, will discuss this year's Headed for the Hills Festival, taking place from August the 2nd to August the 4th in Prattsville. That's 3 days of music, dance, workshops, burlesque, art, drag, and more. To view our full programming schedule, make a one-time donation, or become a WGXC sustaining member, visit our website, WGXC.org.
Paul, come on in.
Hi.
You want to pull up a chair? And there's your mic. Remember, you got to get close. You've been here before. This is Paul Ricciardi.
Hi, everybody.
From the Ancram Opera House.
That's me.
I think you may have skipped a season with us. Most,
I did.
I mean, I guess you're so well established over there, you don't need us anymore.
We were waiting for your phone call.
Oh, okay.
Like, why aren't they calling us?
Yeah. Your partner in crime, Jeffrey Musso, is not here today.
He's running the ship out in Ancram.
Well,
someone
yeah,
has to keep their hand
on
the steering on
the
wheel.
The steering wheel,
yeah.
Or the rudder.
So you got stuck with me.
Okay.
Here I am.
Folks, just to bring our listening audience up to date,
yes.
In case all those new residents in Hudson Valley have not yet discovered the Ancram Opera House, which used to be, was built as a Grange Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what a Grange Hall does?
I do.
What?
I do. So a Grange Hall is a meeting house for farmers, and they were part of the Grange movement. So in the late 1800s and into the 1900s, there was the Grangers were almost a union for farmers, but with, you know, as railroads became more possible and more popular, the farmers' union became less necessary.
Were they trying to establish a uniform price, or were they trying to arrange how to transport their stuff together?
You just crossed over the line of my knowledge.
Oh, okay.
That's what I read in the pamphlet.
Well, that's good enough. So the farmers gathered there to do stuff.
It was a place to
do stuff.
Yeah. A meeting place.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, it's a delightful little...
Oh, Ellen's
building.
Been to many of your events, I believe.
She's been on our stage.
I was going to let her.
Well,
real people, real stories.
Yes,
you told a story
true.
2 years ago.
I was just about to say that I'm glad to see that you're starting your season again with
real people, real stories.
Real stories.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a popular thing.
It's our seventh one, and I just counted. We've had 30, over the past 4 years, we've had 30 different storytellers.
Wow.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, we do it twice a year, once in the summer, once in December. What?
You haven't asked me?
Well, you have to call the pitch line.
Oh, you got to pitch these stories?
Yeah, you got to pitch them. You don't just show up.
Oh, okay.
It's curated.
Oh, excuse me. Fancy schmancy guy you are.
Yeah.
Okay. Forget it then.
But it's a little different
no
than
stories.
The other like storytelling events because it's not competitive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a story slam. And we work with local community members, most of whom have never done this before.
Mm-hmm.
And then I coach storytellers for up to 5 hours to help them
order
the story.
Oh, that's great.
Find these little sort of points in the story
so
you always know where you're going.
Give it a
so
little structure.
Yeah, so it's a real community event.
Because, you know, my daughter was out in Chicago and she went to one of these story things.
Yeah.
And I think it's one that was managed by those
people.
The
Moth. Yeah.
Yeah, the Moth, guy. And she got up and did it. And I was like, you just got up and told the story? She said, yeah. It's like, that doesn't sound like something I'd want to hear. Because I've heard most of her stories.
Yeah.
But I like the idea that you, as you say, you curate it.
Yeah.
You direct it.
Yeah, I feel like I'm a dramaturg, and a dramaturg is in the world of theater.
Yes.
It's the person who helps the playwright make sure that the play actually
is that
makes
what a dramaturg
the best sense possible. I
always wonder what the heck that...
There are two kinds. There's the dramaturg that works with the playwright on a new play, but then there's also a production dramaturg.
Right, that's the one.
So if we were doing a production of The Importance of Being Earnest by Oscar Wilde, that dramaturg would help us understand the period, who Oscar Wilde was, and things like that.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah.
I always wondered... Didn't you, Ellen? Always wonder? You probably knew.
She knew.
She knew. She knows that.
Sure, I knew. So tell us a little bit without giving too much away.
Well, you started your season already, right?
We did.
Okay.
We did. We started our season. Oh, but you want me to tell you about the stories without ruining it for everybody?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, the important thing that people should know is that our summer edition is this Saturday at 8 p.m. at the Ancram Opera House, 1330 County Route 7, Ancram, New York, www.ancramoperahouse.org. how is that?
Excellent.
And
I like to give out the facts here.
We usually have 4 to 5 storytellers. We've got 4 storytellers this time. And there are some really, really great stories. One of the storytellers is a longtime Ancram resident, Diane Valden. And we've got another storyteller, Norm Deguerre, who lives here in Hudson. And then a woman named Tina Millman, who lives over in Sheffield, which is just in Massachusetts, 20 miles east of Ankrum. And then this man, Mark Senak, who just moved to Copake. So they're all very local. And, you know, I'm not going to tell you what the stories are
now,
about.
Do you
but
insist these stories are true?
Yes, they have to be true.
Oh, really?
And they have to be about your lived experience. So you couldn't come and tell us a story about your grandmother. It has to be about your lived experience, something that happened to
you. So you have fact checkers to make sure you go
ahead. I know, right? We don't. I wish I had one. I think they're, you know, every once in a while, I'm kind of like, maybe that was stretched a little bit. But overall,
they feel pretty real.
Is there any, there's no theme of the meet of the evening then?
No. We've had themes before, but, you know, honestly, it's the program's still pretty new.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think at a point, that limits who can participate. If I make it a theme about, you know, owning pets, then that kind of limits who can participate.
Well, it wouldn't limit us two. We were just talking about that before.
Are you pet owners?
Oh, God. I just got a new dog.
Oh.
He was born in February. He's a very handsome young man.
Yeah.
Young dog, I mean. Yep. And, but it's a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And my cat.
So maybe we should do
one. My cat is not too happy about it.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And Ellen, as you may or may not know, has two cats, one male, one female. Mimi and Rascal.
That sounds good. Yeah. Yeah.
Mine are Butch and Sparky.
That sounds good too.
Yeah. Butch is the cat. The
Sparky's
cat.
The dog.
That Sparky's the dog.
So yeah, no theme.
Right.
We've tried it before, and I think as it gets more popular, we'll be able to do that.
Sure. So they're going to be on Saturday night. Is that what's happening?
Yep.
This Saturday. Is it a one-time performance?
It's a one-time. We do it twice a year. We'll do it this Saturday, and always once in the summer, and then once usually in December.
Mm-hmm.
So if you miss this one, you can get a new crew in December.
Do you record them?
The answer is no, not yet. We're working on it, but you know, to get things recorded well takes money. So,
yeah,
and we're a nonprofit organization, so we're getting there.
Do the storytellers usually write down their stories?
No, I plead with them not to do that, because once they're written up, then it becomes a monologue.
Right,
and so you know what we do is, I have my own system I created. It's called the Mile Marker System. And it was born out of the fact that I drive up and down the Taconic a lot.
See those weird
little
mile markers.
Yeah, and then I'll be on the road. My husband will call and say, where are you? And I'll say, I'm at mile marker wherever. And so I create these mile markers in people's stories. So if you're telling a story, you always know that I've just passed, you know, the point in the story when I was at the store. And I know I'm heading to the doghouse. So we create these points in the story so the storyteller never gets lost.
And those, they should remember, you don't write those down either.
No, but I make sure that the storyteller can rattle off,
the
6 mile
got
markers.
It. Got it.
And then that keeps the storyteller safe.
How many do you think they normally need, mile markers?
Yeah. Most stories, the shortest story is 7-8 minutes, and the longest is never more than 14.
Okay.
So, you know, the longer stories have like 10 or 12, and the short ones have 6. So, and
yeah, now that they realize what it's about, I could never do it. I don't have any.
I bet you could.
No, I don't have any stories. My
yes,
life is totally boring.
Yes, you do.
That's not true.
I make up good stuff. I make up good stuff.
Oh,
but that's not allowed.
That's not acceptable.
Yeah.
Well, you have to come to one of my storytelling workshops. And
Ellen, I mean, were you inspired? Does your involvement with this precede the whole phenomenon with Moth and all those other people who do this?
No, you came when you did this, when you came out to the Opera House 2 years ago, and the Moth has been going on for like 10,
Okay.
But the Moth definitely inspired us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we I do a lot of driving and I listen to the Moth. And when we first started the Opera House, a little bell went off in our head and we said, well, let's get some Moth storytellers. And then we said, forget that. Let's just do it ourselves and get community members to do it.
But I remember what I talked about, what the story was about, but it's like I started with one story in my head, and I think ended up with a completely different one.
That's right.
Really?
That's right. Yeah.
You have more up there than you think you do.
Not me. I have
We're gonna
less
have to put
than
this
I think
to
I
the test. But that's really true, Ellen. So
really?
A lot of the storytellers that come in. You know, I'm thinking of a woman named Debbie Mayer who lived here in Hudson.
Yeah,
Debbie was one of our first storytellers.
One of Ellen's BFFs.
And so Debbie came in with a story about wanting about her dog and how her dog always wants to ride with its head out the window. And she had this very sweet story about her dog.
I've seen that phenomenon.
Yeah. Yes. And I said to myself as I was listening to Debbie, this isn't the story. And so with some interviewing and questioning, I actually found out that that was a tiny piece of the story, and the story was about something more profound. It was in part, not completely, but it had a lot more to do with the passing of her husband.
Right.
And so the story she thought she was going to tell became a different story.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Which was really interesting. So.
And that's where your role comes in the whole process.
Yeah. Yeah, as the dramaturg.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you usually mount three or four storytellers in an evening?
When we first started, it was six, and that felt a little too long. And four to five is like 50 minutes to an hour and 10 minutes, and that feels like the right amount of time to sit and listen to individuals talk about themselves.
Do you do you still sponsor those booze cruises from Hudson to Ankrum?
You mean the bus?
The bus, I meant.
We don't. The shuttle bus we've put on hiatus.
Ah. Because you get enough people coming now. Is that the idea?
We do. I mean, it's fun.
I mean, that probably helped you, get started in terms
of people love the idea of the bus. Mm-hmm. We've done other versions of that, but not this summer.
Okay.
We're still trying different things.
Good.
Yeah.
No, it's good that you can get enough people. It's not that far, really. I know exactly where it is, but
it's 19 minutes from the top of Warren to the Opera House.
Cool.
Driving the speed limit.
We're talking about the Ankrum Opera House, folks.
That's right.
Not the
right.
Hudson Opera House.
In Ankrum, New York.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty straightforward ride. You kind of like go down to the 82.
You drive down 82. You pass the West Taconic Diner.
And just
keep going. Another 9 minutes past that.
Yeah, it's very easy. Mm-hmm. So what else you got on tap for the summer?
Well, after this weekend, we're going to be presenting Terrell Alvin McCraney's The Brother Size, which Terrell Alvin McCraney, he wrote Choir Boy, which was just on Broadway, and he wrote the screenplay for Moonlight, which won all those awards.
That's how most people know.
So this play opens Thursday, the 8th of August, and it runs for the rest of the month. So
did Moonlight begin as a play?
It was inspired by a play, and I'm not going to remember the name of the play was not Moonlight.
Oh, okay. But by one of his own plays?
Yes, that's right. That's okay. Right. Yeah.
It's WGXC 90.7 FM.
Right.
Accra.
Keep going.
Hudson, Catskill, Phoenicia, and lots
of
other places.
That's an interesting addition.
And Valencia.
And
or
Valencia.
As they usually call it when you first land in Columbia County.
Valati. Very well done. Did you mention the online way
and
to hear?
Online at WGXC.org.
Yes.
Girls Alive is a safe space for young women in grades 8 through 12 to meet at TSL every Wednesday from 3:30 to 5:30 p.m. beginning December 6th. Our focus is growing strong and healthy whole beings within the context of community. As we learn what it takes to be memorable leaders in our community, we will be enjoying local foods, expressing hair art, singing, dancing, and moving to a collective body of music and sound. Want to take it up a notch? We will be learning proper sexual health, holistic remedies, and medicinal herbs. Let us be unstoppable. Information on how to get involved is available at wisebodies.org. See you there!
Here's what's coming up on WGXE 90.7 FM on Friday, July 26, 2019. Tune in to the WGXE Afternoon Show, from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. This show features local news, interviews with community leaders and personalities, and a rundown of local and regional events, weather updates, and more. And you can call in to go on the air with our host at 518-828-2090. In the second hour of the show, Nancy Barton, the director of the Prattsville Arts Center and Residency, will discuss this year's Headed for the Hills Festival, taking place from August the 2nd to August the 4th in Prattsville. That's 3 days of music, dance, workshops, burlesque, art, drag, and more. To view our full programming schedule, make a one-time donation, or become a WGXC sustaining member, visit our website, WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Waveform's WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Waveform Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Dave King and Frank Tortaglioni of Philmont, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, July the 26th, 2019. I'm Mike Clifford. Bill Barr and the Trump administration announced plans to reinstate the federal death penalty. Also on our Friday rundown, giving foster kids a college boost. Plus, the Americans with Disabilities Act marks 29 years. Now our top story, Attorney General Bill Barr announced plans to reinstate the federal death penalty in the U.S. before the end of this year. Four of the five inmates Trump's Justice Department plans to execute in the coming months are eligible for the federal death penalty because of provisions in the anti-crime bill backed by 2020 Democratic presidential frontrunner Joe Biden. NBC News reports the Justice Department's announcement Thursday that it would resume capital punishment came just 2 days after Biden reversed course when he proposed a termination of the federal death penalty. Meantime, a new law gives young people in the state of Pennsylvania foster care system a real chance to get a college education.
Kids in foster care face obstacles to college that other students may not, especially as they age out of the system and begin living independently. But now, under the Fostering Independence Through Education Act, those with a high school diploma or GED can get a waiver on tuition and fees at any public or private college or university in the state. According to Maura McInerney with the Education Law Center, Pennsylvania now ranks second in the nation for college debt.
This new law will ensure that children who are in foster care can afford to attend college, many of whom are on their own, and therefore don't have the support and the safety net that other students would have while in college.
The waivers are available to students who were in foster care at age 16 or older and can be used for 5 years up to age 26. The program will go into effect in the 2020 fall semester. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
To remain eligible, those students will need to maintain satisfactory academic progress in their college classes. And looking ahead to next week when Democrats face off in Detroit for the second presidential debate, conservation groups would like to hear from them.
In a lead-up to the debates, a coalition of groups has released a 5-point platform that puts water at the top of the agenda for the 20 candidates. Laura Rubin, with the Healing Our Waters Great Lakes Coalition, says the action plan would include a multi-billion-dollar investment to fix drinking water and wastewater infrastructure.
Whether it's
toxic water or sewage in our water or flooding, you can't come and talk about economies and about healthcare without realizing that the underlying fact has to do with just access to clean drinking water.
The coalition is calling on candidates to support $475 million for the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative, a plan the Trump administration has tried trimming or eliminating for the last 3 years. I'm Roz Brown.
As with the first Democratic debate, 10 candidates will share their views with a national television audience on July 30th, another 10 the following night, July 31st. Anti-hunger groups pushing back against a Trump administration proposal that would kick more than 3 million people off of food stamps. Here's Eric Tegetoff.
Under the current rule, qualified recipients of temporary assistance for needy families are automatically enrolled in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. Oregon and 42 other states use the rule to streamline the process for receiving food benefits. U.S. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue sees it as a loophole and says eliminating it would save $2.5 billion. But Jeff Kleen with Oregon Food Bank says the government is neglecting its role to help people meet their basic needs.
It's extremely frustrating to see government action that would actually increase hunger. It is the government's role to reduce hunger, not increase it.
The Oregon Department of Human Services still is calculating how many people in the state could be affected by a rule change. The Oregonian reports that if the state is affected to the same degree as the rest of the country, nearly 60,000 people would lose assistance.
That public comment period on the proposal opened until September the 23rd. And finally, our Mary Sherman reports legislation that has changed the lives of millions of Americans marks its 29th anniversary today.
The Americans with Disabilities Act was signed into law on June 26, 1990, and is considered the most significant piece of civil rights legislation since the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Peter Berg with the Great Lakes ADA Center in Chicago explains in 2008 the bill was amended to clarify the definition of disability and provide broad protection from discrimination. And he notes, as the world changes, the law needs continued updating.
Within the last 5-8 years, the Department of Justice revised its regulations covering state and local governments and private businesses, and also issued updated accessibility standards. It went a long way in attempting to unify the ADA standards with other industry standards.
The ADA aims to ensure that people with physical or mental disabilities have the same rights and opportunities as others in all areas of public life, including employment, education, and transportation. While the law has transformed accommodations for many with disabilities, some advocates contend the country must be committed to fulfilling the full promise of the ADA by working to create a more inclusive society.
Just recently, two retail organizations asked the U.S. Supreme Court to take a case involving a blind customer who sued Domino's Pizza because its website and mobile app were not accessible to people using screen reading software. I'm Mike Clifford. Thanks for wrapping up your week with Public News Service. We are member and listener supported, and you will find us online at publicnewsservice.org.
The National Weather Service in Albany predicts that Friday should be sunny with a high of 80 and a low around 62. Saturday should also be sunny with a high of 80, low around 64. There's a chance of showers in the afternoon Saturday, a 20% chance. Sunday should be mostly sunny again with a high of 83. Again, a 20% chance of rain or a thunderstorm throughout the day. Sunday night, a low around 65. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears.
WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, New York, 90.7 FM. Listeners reported. It's radio for open ears, open heart, open hands, and open mind. We give thanks again to you for supporting WGXC all through the years, and then I hope that you stay with us.
This is Nature Note with Angela Gibbons of Earthwalk Vermont.
Today I'm feeling thankful for milkweed. Common milkweed is a native perennial typically found in abundance in open fields in June and July. What makes milkweed so special is the monarch butterflies. Did you know that monarchs co-evolved with milkweeds? These butterflies developed a unique adaptation that allows their caterpillars to feed on a plant that many other insects cannot. The white sap produced by milkweed plants contains toxic compounds. Most other insects cannot digest these toxins. Milkweed kills them, or they avoid it altogether due to its foul taste. However, monarch caterpillars harmlessly absorb these toxins as they feed on milkweed leaves. This makes the caterpillars themselves toxic. The toxins found in the milkweed actually help protect the caterpillars and adult butterflies from birds and other predators. Even though milkweed is toxic to most insects, humans can eat it if it's cooked. The flower buds, flowers, and young seed pods of the milkweed plant all make fine steamed vegetables. As with any wild food, make sure you can positively identify the common milkweed before harvesting. Check one or more field guides. Even better, join a friend who knows wild edible plants. Monarchs and humans can enjoy the milkweed. However, this time of year, give the monarch butterflies the right of way. Long live the milkweed and the monarch butterflies.
Nature Note comes to you weekly from earthwalkvermont.org and Goddard College Community Radio.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, you've got Sean Bauermaster here.
Oh, we've been trying to call you, and
yeah,
we can't get...
I'm not quite sure why it wasn't ringing through. I've been getting other calls, and here I am, so it does work somehow.
That's weird. I don't know why either. But thanks for calling in.
Yeah. Well,
can you hear us okay?
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, next Thursday, August 1st, you're going to be showing your that's your latest documentary, correct?
Yeah, it's a big feature documentary called Ghost Fleets, which we're going to show at the Basilica next Thursday on August 1st.
At 7:30. And can you just give I read the capsule description, but you look at the lives of Indonesian fishermen who have been kind of forced into, they've been enslaved? Is that?
Yeah, in simplest terms, yeah, fishermen, mostly out of Southeast Asia, who have escaped slavery, many of whom have been held from anywhere from 2 years to a dozen years.
Wow.
On fishing boats that work all around the world, you know.
Oh, it's not just there.
It's a film we've been working on for 6+ years, and it's based largely on the tales of guys who've actually escaped that life,
uh-huh.
but also on a Thai woman who's made it her mission in life to kind of find and help repatriate these guys, because if they do escape, they end up, you know, thousands of miles from home with no ID, no money, no language skills. They don't really know where they are.
Oh,
and
I
they
see.
Don't know who to trust.
Oh, so it's not just fishing nearby in Indonesia. It's they take them to other fishing grounds.
Yeah, their boats work literally around the world, off the coast of Africa, Europe, China, even the United States.
Oh, so you know, we were talking about some of the domestic fishing because. You know, saying, Alaska fishing, that's not part of this or anything. Could it be even Alaska fishing?
No. I mean, they might. I don't, to be honest, I don't think they would go up in those cold waters.
Oh, okay.
But
oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's just like, you know, it's very similar to what happens with sex slaves and
indentured right.
servants. They get promised one job, and then they show up and they say, oh, well, actually, your job is going to be on this boat. Give us your passport and give us all your money and then some of them never see land again for years.
Wow.
And part of it's, you know, I think the film's been very successful as a documentary. It had its premiere a year ago on Labor Day at the Telluride, and then played
nice.
A bunch of times at the Toronto International Film Festival. But I think one of the reasons it's had success is because it combines these two worlds of ocean conservation and human trafficking.
Right.
Which is kind of a rare combination. Because one of the reasons these guys are not paid is because the boats are having to go further and further to find fish because they're so badly overfished the world's oceans.
Uh-huh.
And as a result, one easy line item for these boat company owners to cross off their spreadsheet is labor.
Yeah.
They just don't pay them, period.
Right. Now, I'm familiar with somebody. I've seen a bunch of your films at Basilica. They were mostly about the Hudson River, right?
Yeah. You know, I've been making documentaries for quite a while.
Ah.
But for the last few years, you know, I've been juggling between that, the Ghost Fleets, which we're going to show next week, and then, yeah, there's a couple series of films based on both environmental risks and environmental hope here in the Hudson Valley and, mm-hmm. and along the Hudson River. The first part of it was called the Hudson River at Risk, and we looked at a bunch of environmental issues ranging from PCBs to leaking nuclear power plants to the fact that, you know, the Hudson River has become this corridor for moving crude oil.
Right.
I showed them around, you know, I showed them at the facility, I showed them probably in 100 venues around New York and up and down the Hudson Valley. And I got quite bummed out. I can't just keep sharing these bad stories. So
right.
I pivoted, and for the last couple of years, we've been making a series called Hope on the Hudson, which has actually been, you know, it's just as easy to find good, positive, hopeful stories as it is to find negative environmental stories.
Well, tell us one of the good things that's happening, for example.
Well, you know, we work a lot with the Farm Hub over in Hurley.
Right.
Big teaching farm, and they're doing a bunch of different things over there. We've documented them in a couple of films. We a few months ago put out these are short films, so
right.
15, 20, 25 minutes.
Right.
We made a short called Growing with the Grain, which is all about the efforts to grow grain in the Hudson Valley at a time when there's a much bigger demand, thanks to the boom in bakers and brewers and mm-hmm. distillers, etc. So that was very sweet. And we're doing another project with them now, which also involves our friends up at Hawthorne Valley, looking mm-hmm. at the link between farming or agriculture and wilderness and wildlife.
You cool.
know, how can the two coexist? And so there are a handful of folks who are looking at that on a couple different big farms about how farmers and wildlife can better coexist. And fascinating, and lots of macro pictures of bugs, insects.
Mm-hmm. I've just recently been thinking about a lot of these issues because I've been meaning to read The Unsettling of America practically since it came out, and I only finally read it a week ago. So as you can imagine, it makes you very aware of these kinds of issues. I mean, Wendell Berry is amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know, the good thing about where we live in the Hudson Valley is that there are incredible stories going on.
Right, that's what
in
I...
agriculture and environment, you know, if you've been to my talk, you've probably heard me say it. I don't have any proof of this, but I firmly believe that there are more environmental activists per capita in the Hudson Valley than anywhere else in the country.
And as
a result, you know, we're tapping into lots of interesting people doing lots of interesting things.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really positive time.
Right. That was one of my experiences reading it. I was thinking, you know, a lot of these things he's recommending are actually happening up here.
Yeah.
In terms of the small farm movement.
Both in the farming movement and in the water cleanliness movement.
Right.
You know, we made a couple films with Riverkeeper about their efforts to assess the water quality up
yep.
and down the river, and efforts to take, you know, these small old mill dams out of the Hudson that will allow the ecosystems to return to their natural state.
Right.
So, you know, I'm just
replenishing.
I have a long list of Hudson River, Hudson Valley films to make, and it's the hope films out. They're a longer list than the Risk movies.
Yeah, I mean, after reading the book, I was also thinking about the efforts around here to deal with waste, which is, you know, one of the horrors of the agribusiness is the way it doesn't deal with waste well. It just kind of pollutes water and all that kind of stuff rather than learning how to reuse it and all that kind of thing. And yet there are efforts around here to do that, to figure it out.
Don't get me started. I was just a two-day convening on plastic, single-use plastic, which is around the world a horror. But again, at least people are out there thinking about solutions and trying to implement them.
How do you? Do most of your films get funded through grants and sponsors, various group sponsors?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
And
I juggle between for-profit films like the Ghost Fleet documentary and these not-for-profit films.
I see.
Hunch River stuff.
So you can actually, you can actually make money off a film like Ghost Sleep, or enough to.
Well, you know, it's hard to judge with the documentary is when you actually make money. Because we have such a big social impact campaign going on.
Yeah.
Where, you know, we're thrilled. It has shown in theaters across the country. You know, we've had lots and lots of screenings at festivals, and but we have this social media campaign or social impact campaign that will continue for another year.
Right.
We're showing, you know, with hosted by NGOs, etc. But, you know, we had really good luck with the film. We showed it at the Vatican. We showed it at the UN. But our biggest screening coming up, we hope, is in Bentonville, Arkansas, which is the home of Walmart.
Yeah.
Because the most of the fish that these slave boats catch is turned into fish mulch, and much of that ends up in American pet food.
Really?
Fish mulch. And Walmart is the biggest purveyor of pet food in the United States.
I didn't know that. Did you know that, Ellen?
No.
That's Ellen Thurston, by the way. I'm Tom DiPietro. It's the Thursday afternoon show. We're talking to John Bauermaster, whose latest full-length documentary. It's full-length, right? The Ghost Fleet?
Oh, yeah, 90 minutes.
90-minute documentary, yep. Ghost Fleet, is going to be right here at Basilica next Thursday night at 7:30. So come on. You're going to be there? Or not?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And you'll be there, too.
I love showing films at the Basilica because they look great, they sound great. They always get a really good... an interested crowd.
Yeah.
But, and, you know, I've had really good luck. I've literally made films on every continent, made a couple in Oceania, a couple in Antarctica, but I'm very happy to be making this series here at home because I remind myself and I remind others that you don't have to travel halfway around the world. To find good stories, especially environmental stories.
We've had the good fortune to interview a lot of documentarians on this show, and I'll never forget, I forget which one who said it, but the thing about being a documentary filmmaker is you can get started pretty easily without a lot of money. The costs come in later in terms of your post-production and getting it all, you know, put together in the end. So it's always inspiring to know that you just start filming, right? I mean, you just find a topic and start.
Well, yeah. I mean, you do have to find the money.
Yeah.
You don't want to. But you know, the Ghost Fleet, I partnered in the end with Vulcan Productions, which is based in Seattle and was founded by Paul Allen, the co-founder of Microsoft.
The late Paul Allen.
He had a great interest. Yeah, he had a great interest in ocean issues and invested a lot of money in illegal fishing issues. And then so this issue of slaves on fishing boats was right up his alley.
Cool. Okay, well, thanks for calling in, John.
Yeah, thank you, and please come next Thursday.
Oh, I'll definitely be there.
It's quite powerful, and like I say, one of the things I especially like about the Basilica is because you know when you make films, you spend a lot of time making sure they look really good and they sound really good, and then some venues you don't always get reimbursed in that regard. But at the Basilica, everything looks good, sounds great, so I'm always. Happy to be there.
Great. Well, we'll be talking it up here in the upcoming week.
Great.
Okay? Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Well, Ellen, that was John Bauermaster, whose film Ghost Fleet will be at Basilica next Thursday at 7:30. I'm going to have to check.